crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Christopher Eames, your host for today. Brent, your regular host, is currently in transit from Oklahoma back to Israel, so we wish him all the best with his time over there. So that means that your future broadcasts from him will once again be coming from on the ground in Israel. Today on the program, we'll cover a few items. The main piece we'll try and get through is a new article coming out on Watch Jerusalem about the prophet Jeremiah. This article looks at the many archaeological connections that have been made to the story of Jeremiah. We'll also look at briefly look at an interesting discovery that has been made down south in Eilat. So, beginning with Jeremiah. Again, this is written up in a detailed new article coming out on Watch Jerusalem. We've just finished our series on uncovering the Bible's buried civilizations, finishing that by looking at the civilization of Babylon. And now we're continuing a new set of articles on the website. I don't want to call it a new series, because that might be too much of a commitment just yet, but we'll plan on at least sporadically putting up a number of these articles. They are to be feature pieces, dressed up with all the pictures and etc. that document the stories and lives of biblical figures and how the scientific field of archaeology has almost unwittingly gone to prove a great deal of their lives and surroundings. Science, as we say in these articles, is not merely uncovering snippets of the Bible, but rather entire stories. So first we looked at King Hezekiah. That article is available on Watch Jerusalem. And now, with this new article coming out and for this radio program, we turn our attention to the prophet Jeremiah. Jeremiah was a widely hated man of his day, of course. His predictions of the fall of Jerusalem and pleas for the peaceful surrender of the people to Babylon caused the ruling classes of Judah to loathe him. Yet the test of time has vindicated Jeremiah and condemned his enemies. Today, Jeremiah is revered as one of the greatest men of the Bible, while his enemies are virtually forgotten. With the advent of modern archaeology, we have now not only the biblical record of Jeremiah's life, but new discoveries are also continuing to shine light on the real people he interacted with, the real people he would have been aware of, and the places that he traveled. So thus far, at least, if my count is right, at least 16 different biblical figures who lived contemporaneously with Jeremiah, 16 different figures have been validated by archaeology. This is not to mention Jeremiah's accurate regional assessments and descriptions that also match the historical record. The Book of Jeremiah isn't, thus, just a fringe pseudo-history with the odd name that happens to correspond to actual events. There is a lot here that has actually been confirmed by science. Now, according to the biblical record, Jeremiah must have been born around 645 BC. He was a young man when he was called by God to begin prophesying, as Jeremiah 1 brings out, and Judah at that time was in the middle of King Josiah's reign. Actually, Josiah was quite a righteous king who accomplished a great deal in rooting out idolatry from the land of Israel. And during Josiah's reign, the Book of the Law was rediscovered by the high priest at the time, Hilkiah. This is an interesting man to us because he has been validated, essentially, through archaeology. He has been proved, shall we say, through archaeological discovery. Now, this man and his son, Azariah, have had their names mentioned on a clay seal known as a bulla, referring to Hilkiah and Azariah. And now we see them in this section of the Bible story as this Hilkiah being the high priest. And he finds this Book of the Law in the temple as they're cleaning the temple out. And he delivers this book of the law to King Josiah, and Josiah begins enforcing the strict observance of this law to the people of Judah at the time in order to postpone Judah's coming punishment that was inevitable, essentially, by the actions of the people, of the populace of Judah, and also because of the evil kings, especially evil King Manasseh, I believe that was Josiah's grandfather, that was reigning at the time. So Jeremiah began delivering his message at this time in the streets of Jerusalem. And if he didn't get much support from the people, at least he would have gotten it from King Josiah. But King Josiah wouldn't be around for much longer. The geopolitical scene at the end of the 7th century BC, this time period, was a rocky one. The Assyrian Empire was losing its grip on power to the emerging Babylonian Empire. The Babylonians had forced the Assyrians back from their capital city, back to Haran, and under the command of Nabopolassar, the Babylonians were about to deliver another blow to the Assyrians. It was down to the Egyptians to arrive and save the day, to save Assyria from this burgeoning Babylonian empire. Now, in order for the Egyptians to do that, they had to traverse through the territory of the Kingdom of Judah and up through what had been the Northern Kingdom of Israel. Of course, by that point, Israel had already been destroyed by the Assyrians. So the Pharaoh Necho at the time period, as the Bible calls him by name, Pharaoh Necho, had to take his troops through the kingdom of Judah, and King Josiah was having none of this. Josiah basically gathered together his army into the valley of Megiddo to stop Pharaoh Necho in his attempt to come through and help the Assyrians against the Babylonians. Now, this clash between Josiah and Pharaoh Necho didn't have to happen. The Pharaoh pleaded with Josiah just to let him through and to let him be on his way. But Josiah, he disguised himself so he wouldn't be picked out amongst his soldiers and fought back against the Egyptians. And this was a disaster for the kingdom of Judah. Judah's armies were wiped out by the Egyptians, and Josiah was killed during this battle. Now, this was a terrible moment, especially for Jeremiah, and he wrote the Book of Lamentations as a result of Josiah having died. Josiah was the last righteous king over the kingdom of Judah, and now it was inevitable that the prophecies of Judah's fall wouldn't be postponed any longer. They would be racing along right up until the final destruction of the kingdom of Judah. So Pharaoh Necho continued on his way to Haran to help the Assyrians against the Babylonians, and the Egyptians were defeated by the Babylonians. And so the Egyptians thus came back through Judah. They found out that Josiah's son Jehoahaz had set himself up as king, and Pharaoh Necho basically took him captive, immediately levied a massive tax on Jerusalem, installed another son of Josiah, Jehoiakim, on the throne, and took the captive Jehoahaz back to Egypt. So Josiah's defeat and death was a tragic moment for Judah, and now nothing was going to stop the downfall of Judah. So the prophet Jeremiah continued to faithfully prophesy the unpopular message of the sins and downfall of his nation. He predicted that Jerusalem would essentially turn into another Shiloh. Shiloh was the city, of course, that the tabernacle was located in. It was utterly destroyed by the Philistines. Archaeological evidence has shown that, along with the biblical story of that. And the archaeological evidence shows that during Jeremiah's time, that city was still a wasteland. And so the princes, especially in Judah at the time, were quite angry at Jeremiah for predicting Jerusalem's fall and destruction, as had happened to the city of Shiloh. So they shut Jeremiah away from publicly proclaiming the downfall of Jerusalem. That didn't stop him, however. He dictated further prophecies to his scribe Baruch, who wrote them down on a scroll. Jeremiah then sent Baruch to read the scroll in the temple. Baruch specifically took the scroll into the chamber of Gemariah, the son of Shaphan. Now, this scribe Gemariah has actually been confirmed through archaeology. Another royal clay seal was found, this time in 1992 in Jerusalem, at excavations in the palace area of the city of David. The seal reads, "Belonging to Gemariah, the son of Shaphan." This man, incredibly confirmed through this excavation here, actually proved helpful to Jeremiah and Jeremiah's cause. He, along with the other princes present, heard the words of the scroll and immediately saw its significance. They told Baruch to hide himself, and they took this message to King Jehoiakim. The king, of course, was furious, and he snatched up the scroll, cut it in half, threw it into his fireplace, and that was that. Jeremiah immediately dictated a replacement scroll, and within this scroll had further prophecies, thus against Jehoiakim and his children, prophesying that Jehoiakim's children would not continue on the throne of David. Now, right around this time period, we have the Egyptians trying once more at the Battle of Carchemish to defeat Babylon. This is described in the Bible and also heavily validated through science, through archaeology. It isn't just a small battle talked about within the pages of the Bible. This is seen as one of the great decisive battles of secular history. And the Nebuchadnezzar Chronicle is a noteworthy example describing the defeat that occurred in 605 BC against the Egyptians by the Babylonians. So now, under the new king of Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar II, this is the famous king of Babylon, the Babylonians' sights were set on Judah. So they immediately put Jehoiakim, king of Judah, under subservience to them. This lasted about 3 years before Jehoiakim rebelled. As such, armies came in, decimated a lot of Judah, and Jehoiakim was taken captive to Babylon, along with various temple treasures and captives. Now, in the place of Jehoiakim, his son Jehoiachin, also known as Jeconiah, reigned in his place. This man had one of the shortest lengths of reign of any king of Judah, just over 3 months. Yet even in this short period of time, he garnered a reputation for himself as an evil king. So Jeremiah had several prophecies against this man that he would fall into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. And within 3 months, this is exactly what happened. Nebuchadnezzar swept in again to Jerusalem, took Jeconiah and his mother and several servants captive. More treasures were looted from the temple and carried back to the to Babylon, as well as 10,000 general captives. Jeconiah, while taken captive, was still kept alive in Babylon, and there are some really interesting archaeological attestations to Jeconiah's presence in Babylon. The captive Jeconiah is mentioned a number of times on Babylonian tablets regarding oil rations and deliveries. The tablets variously refer to him as the king of Judah or son of a king of Judah, and they offer a unique snapshot into Jeconiah's imprisoned life as he's being essentially put on the rations. And much later in the story, about 25 years after the fall, the final fall of Judah, the Babylonian king Evil-Merodach removed Jeconiah from this confinement and gave him greater rations of food and great favor. And this Babylonian king, Evil-Merodach, is also attested to through archaeology by his native name, Awil-Marduk. So, going back in time then, in place of Jeconiah, after he was taken captive, Nebuchadnezzar made his uncle, King Zedekiah, to be the ruler over Judah. This king would have much interaction with Jeremiah over the course of his reign, and almost all of it would be bad. Well, we'll take a short break there and then resume the story of Jeremiah and the final days of Judah under King Zedekiah.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm. Thank you for listening. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem, and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back. We've been talking here on Watch Jerusalem about the fascinating story of the prophet Jeremiah and how that story is being filled out by amazing archaeological discoveries. That story is coming out in article form on our website, watchjerusalem.co.il, so be sure to check it out there. Right now, we're at the point in the story when King Zedekiah assumes the throne of Judah. Now, this would have been at the time that Judah finally falls into the abyss at the hands of the Babylonians. King Zedekiah was an evil and ineffective king, and while he was afraid personally to deal with Jeremiah, he did allow his princes freedom to do with the prophet essentially as they pleased. As such, Jeremiah was abused and imprisoned several times, and King Zedekiah also had the gall, even in his weak position, to defy King Nebuchadnezzar, just like the kings before him. The Babylonian king must have been incredulous. So again, King Nebuchadnezzar amasses his forces to descend on Jerusalem. It was beginning to sound here like a broken record for King Nebuchadnezzar. And again, Jeremiah continued to warn the population and the ruling classes to repent and surrender to the Babylonians. If only they surrendered, he said, their lives would be spared. So at this point, the Babylonians now sweep into Judah. We often think about this time period in terms of Jerusalem's suffering and destruction, but we can't forget the regional destruction and broader suffering and collapse of the cities of Judah. Two other significant cities are named by Jeremiah in the book of Jeremiah as being Lachish and Azekah. They were set upon by the Babylonians, and they are both referenced in an interesting archaeological discovery known as the Lachish letters. These letters are actually pottery fragments written on by an officer located in a city outside Lachish to an officer located inside Lachish. These pottery pieces were found at Lachish. Now, one of these letters, dating to the time of Babylonia's incursion, reads, quote, "And may my lord be apprised that we are watching for the fire signals of Lachish, according to all the signs which my lord has given, because we cannot see Azekah." Now, you have to realize at this time period, the major cities of Judah communicated through massive fire signals. And so what this officer was saying was that he couldn't see the fire signals coming from Azekah, what is happening to the city. Now, a fire signal meant that all was well, everything was going okay. So this officer was looking out hopeful to see this fire signal from Azekah, nothing. So, ergo, he must have thought, well, the city must have fallen to the Babylonians as they're invading. And now he's writing desperately to this commanding officer in Lachish, essentially worried that maybe Lachish also will not have a fire signal. Maybe they are being taken, as we speak, by the Babylonians. So that was what this commanding officer was worried about. He couldn't see the fire signal from Azekah. He was worried that he might not be able to see it at Lachish. So it was a really interesting snapshot here through these pottery pieces, a really tense snapshot in time as the Babylonians are sweeping into Judah, destroying city after city. But in Jerusalem, meanwhile, King Zedekiah was vacillating between asking Jeremiah to pray for the welfare of Judah and throwing him in prison. On one occasion, he sent Jehukal, the son of Shelemiah, along to ask Jeremiah to pray for the city. Now, this prince Jehukal, son of Shelemiah, he has been discovered through archaeological excavations. We actually had the small clay seal stamp with his name on it, Jehukal, son of Shelemiah. We had that on display, some of our listeners might remember. In our headquarters campus building, Armstrong Auditorium, we had the big Seals of Jeremiah's Captors discovered exhibit. And this bulla, along with the bulla belonging to his fellow prince, Gedaliah, son of Pashur, they were both displayed at our headquarters location there. So at this point in time, Zedekiah sends this Jehukal, son of Shelemiah, not just a figure in the Bible, but also found in archaeological context, he sends him to Jeremiah to ask him to pray. Now, later on in the story, Jehukal and Gedaliah attempt to kill the prophet Jeremiah. They throw him into a miry dungeon within which he sinks. Fortunately, the eunuch, the Ethiopian eunuch Ebed-Melech, comes to Jeremiah's rescue. And so you have the unique record, archaeological record, of these two dastardly princes, Gedaliah and Jehukal, really confirming, amazingly, the biblical record. And these would have been figures that Jeremiah was very familiar with. And it just continues to show an amazing record proved by archaeology of what Jeremiah wrote about. So finally, after 1.5 years of siege, the Babylonians broke through into the city of Jerusalem. They finally got into Jerusalem. Starvation had taken a heavy toll on the inhabitants. Zedekiah and the royal family had attempted to escape, but had been captured. And Zedekiah was sent to Babylon. He witnessed his sons being killed before his eyes, and then his own eyes were burned out. Now, there's a number of archaeological artifacts attesting to the biblical Babylonian princes that were present at the defeat of Jerusalem. There's about three princes here that Jeremiah talks about that have been discovered and proved through archaeology. I won't take the time to go through that. You can have a look at that online on the article. But the Babylonians treated the prophet Jeremiah quite favorably and allowed him to stay in the land, which he did with the Jews, the poor Jews who were allowed to remain. But these Jews forcibly took Jeremiah with them in a reverse exodus back into Egypt. These Jews were worried that Babylon was going to come into Jerusalem again, was going to kill them again, and against Jeremiah's warning, he was taken with them back into Egypt. And so Jeremiah now began prophesying against the Jews in Egypt, saying that they would after all suffer at the hands of the Babylonians. They weren't going to if they had stayed in Judah, but now they would in Egypt. And true to form, archaeology has revealed a Babylonian invasion into Egypt that occurred about 18 years after this fall of Judah, around 568 BC. So it is in Egypt where the biblical description of Jeremiah ends. There is no mention of his death anywhere in the Bible. Many conclude that he simply died in Egypt. What happened to him? Most people lose sight of the prophet Jeremiah after this point because they fail to fully understand his commission from God. He wasn't just a prophet of doom, so to speak. But right at the beginning of his calling, God gave Jeremiah a two-part commission. Quoting Jeremiah 1 verse 10, we read, "See, I have this day set thee over the nations," God talking to Jeremiah, "set thee over the nations to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down." That was his first commission, a commission of prophesying the destruction of Judah. And his second commission here, "I have set thee to build and to plant." So Jeremiah's job of rooting out and destroying was now over. Now it was time for the vital second part of Jeremiah's commission. This part of the story is full of intrigue and investigation, and frankly, I believe it's one of the strongest proofs of the validity and authority of the Bible. God had promised to his servant David that he would always have a descendant to rule upon his throne right up to the coming of the Messiah. You can read about that in 2 Samuel 7 and Jeremiah 33. So this would be an unbroken lineage on the throne. God declared that this promise would be as sure as the sun in the daytime and the moon in the nighttime. But many people, however, believe this promise was broken after King Zedekiah was taken into captivity and all his sons had been slaughtered. Is that true? Is that where the Jewish throne ended? What happened to the Jewish throne? Could God have lied? Where did the Jewish throne disappear to after it had been rooted out during the time of Jeremiah? The throne must be somewhere. The answer has everything to do with the second part of Jeremiah's commission. There was a surviving heir to the throne. Now Jeremiah would be used to build and plant that throne safely in a faraway location. This incredible story, pieced together through various biblical verses and national histories, is far too lengthy, frankly, to cover on this radio program. You can read it online or request a free hard copy of our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, to prove for yourself the incredible history of what really happened to Jeremiah and the Jewish throne. Well, that wraps up our summary of Jeremiah's life as described in this new Watch Jerusalem article. Again, it is simply amazing to see all of the archaeological attestation to the various aspects of the story. Again, at least 16 biblical figures contemporary to Jeremiah that have been validated through archaeology. And then beyond the names, there's the various regional and diplomatic situations that Jeremiah accurately describes. The Battle of Haran, the Battle of Carchemish, the fact that Nebuchadnezzar repeatedly attacked Jerusalem, that's been proven through archaeology. Evidence of the destruction of Lachish, Jerusalem, wider Judea, and even the Babylonian incursion into Egypt. So we are seeing archaeology isn't only verifying snippets of the Bible, but entire stories. Right, briefly in other news, there has been an interesting discovery down at the copper mines in Eilat, known as King Solomon's Mines. A huge amount of copper was needed for Solomon's burgeoning kingdom, and these mines are believed to have provided materials for King Solomon. These mines, while now in the territory of Israel, are believed to have been, at the time of their operation, in the territory of the kingdom of Edom. Solomon likely used these mines for his building projects. Now, these mines began operating before Solomon's time, but interestingly, the peak output of these mines occurred during the time of King Solomon. These mines have been known about for a little while now. What has just become known, though, is the discovery of preserved colored cloth dating to Solomon's time period. This cloth shows the earliest evidence of plant-based dye ever found in Israel. These cloth pieces were extremely expertly made. They were dyed in colors of red and blue, and you can see it clearly for yourself in the pictures online. What actually surprised me was not only the fabric dye, but also the small, delicate, close weave of the cloth. Perhaps we can have the thought stuck in our mind of people back in those days being basically just living in the sticks out there, that they weren't very advanced, but that's not the case. Actually, they were very skilled craftsmen, not only in metalwork and construction, but also in fabrics. So these well-preserved, beautifully woven pieces of cloth, 3,000 years old, attest to that. What has been surprising, apparently, to researchers is the quality of the fine cloth that these metal workers had on them. The researchers speculate that seeing as the metal workers were regarded as fine craftsmen, they probably were entitled to wear colorful clothing as a mark of high status. The idea of prized skilled laborers working at these mines goes flat in the face of conventional wisdom that these were just mainly slave laborers. Anyway, an interesting glimpse there into the kinds of clothing metal workers were wearing right around the time that their copper was in high demand by Solomon for his kingdom of Israel. Well, that's it for today's program. If you have any comments or feedback, feel free to email us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Be sure to tune in next week to hear your host Brent Nagtegale reporting from Jerusalem. Until then, have a good week and thanks for listening.